no man who would behave that way at that moment in time can ever serve in any position of authority in our nation again. He is unfit for any office.
Wyoming Republican Representative Liz Cheney during the January 6th committee's final hearing yesterday, the committee laid out four possible criminal charges the Justice Department could bring against former President Donald Trump. The first time ever that Congress has referred a former president for criminal prosecution. The committee's final report detailing all its findings is expected tomorrow. Burbank Congressman Adam Schiff is chair of the House Intelligence Committee and was a member of the January 6th committee. Welcome back to Press Play.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
Great to have you on. You were among a group of four committee members, as I understand it, who put together these recommendations for potential criminal indictments, the four referrals the panel ultimately settled on. For President Trump were, in brief, inciting or aiding an insurrection, conspiracy to defraud the United States, obstruction of an act of Congress, and making knowingly and willfully materially false statements to the federal government. Were there other charges that you discussed that you didn't ultimately adopt?
There were other statutes that we thought may be violated, and we did make reference to them, although not in the same manner. Seditious conspiracy, for example, that some of the people who attacked the Capitol, attacked police officers, organized this assault, have already been convicted of in court. And so we wanted the Justice Department to consider that as well. But the four that we enumerated, we did so because we had the strongest evidence in our possession. And that was true regardless of what the Justice Department may have in its possession. And those were the ones that we most wanted to highlight.
Well, of course, the Justice Department is not obligated to take up these criminal referrals at all. They could just, put them in the garbage can if they wanted to. But so why actually make these referrals? Why not just lay out the evidence, make it public? The report is, as I understand it, coming out tomorrow, and just let it lie.
Well, really, a couple of reasons. The first is Congress has a long history of making criminal referrals to the Justice Department, particularly when the conduct involves in the Congress itself. So when someone lies before Congress, we often will refer to that for prosecution. When someone refuses to show up, when served with a congressional subpoena, we'll refer that to prosecution. But the second reason is to hold the Justice Department accountable. We are informing the American people through our actions that we believe that charges are warranted. And while the Justice Department is under no obligation to explain its actions, I think the department understands that it will need to have at least an internal conversation about why did one branch of government believe there was sufficient evidence. And we need to make sure that we analyze that and that we're prepared to defend before history, if not publicly, our decision to charge or not to charge.
Well, so are you concerned that the Justice Department is not going to make any criminal indictments in this regarding the former president or his close associates?
I've been concerned for some time with the slow pace of the Justice Department's investigation when it came to the former president. They move with alacrity concerning the people who violently assaulted the Capitol and police officers. But there were multiple lines of effort to overturn the election. And, of course, there were people higher up than those foot soldiers who attacked the building that day. And there it has taken a very long time. I mean, it's almost 2 years since the events of that day. And the congressional investigation through much of that 2 years has outpaced the Justice Department's own investigation. And that's pretty unheard of. So I do worry that intentionally or otherwise, they are at risk of applying a different standard to the former president than they would for any other American. And that is simply not consistent with what they've committed to do. And it's not consistent with a rule of law that should apply equally to everyone.
But how do you know that they are not amassing their own evidence, that they're not pursuing criminal charges against the former president?
Well, they may be, but and of course they're not supposed to talk publicly about what they're investigating. But generally, there are signs nonetheless. You see a grand jury that's been convened. You see witnesses being called into the courthouse. enterprising journalists report what's going on in the courthouse and who's appearing, and sometimes the lawyers for these witnesses are eager to talk to the press. On some of these things, we just don't see any of that happening. To give you one example, the president's phone call to the Georgia Secretary of State, where he was essentially demanding Brad Raffensperger find 11,780 votes that didn't exist, but were the exact number he needed to overtake Joe Biden. Even at one point, threatening that he could be prosecuted if he didn't do the president's will. That would land anyone under investigation, and indeed the Fulton County, Georgia DA is investigating it, but there's no sign that the Justice Department has been calling in the witnesses the way Georgia has, or at least there wasn't until recently, and that is concerning.
But I guess also concerning, though, is the idea that this might be looked at as politicizing the Justice Department, that the Justice Department would now be under pressure. Are you at all concerned that by referring these four charges, that would make the Justice Department even less likely to want to pursue them for fear of looking politically tainted?
No. I mean, I think if the Justice Department is looking for an excuse not to go forward, this is a pretty thin reed. So, no, I'm not particularly concerned about that, about them having an adverse reaction to a referral. The point of view I've taken through the impeachments, through the January 6th investigation is, we in the House of Representatives need to do our job, regardless of whether others do. And so when there's grounds to impeach the president, we impeached him, even if the Senate might not uphold their oath and convict. When we believe that members have violated their ethical code and their oath of office, we've referred them to the Ethics Committee, whether the Ethics Committee acts or it doesn't. And similarly with the Justice Department, we can only do what's within our responsibility to do and hope that others do their job as well.
Out of the four potential charges, the four recommendations that you have made to the Justice Department, which one is the most difficult to prove, do you think?
I don't know that I could say which is the most difficult to prove. I certainly believe that the charge of inciting insurrection, giving aid and comfort, aiding and abetting essentially the insurrection, is the most unprecedented against the former president. I mean, any charge against a former president is unprecedented, but here that is one of the most serious charges that you could level against anyone. And it's not a statute that's been used since probably the post-Civil War, the Reconstruction period. But that's because we haven't had a president engage in such malign conduct. And that, too, is unprecedented. But I'm sure the fact that that statute hasn't been used in a long time will give the Justice Department pause to make sure that if they do use it, that they can easily prove, certainly prove beyond a reasonable doubt, if they choose to go forward, each of the elements of that offense. But that is the most serious. Sometimes the department will choose to prosecute not the most serious, but the one they believe is most easy to obtain a conviction. Here, I hope they balance the equities, and as they did indeed with the attackers, and use the charges that fit. And in the case of the attackers, seditious conspiracy, another really serious charge. Here, incitement of an insurrection.
Right. So are you referring to Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers and the conviction that they won based on that?
Yes. Yes.
So I guess, though, when you're considering the former president, when he was giving that speech, but right before his supporters marched on the Capitol, that could be just viewed as a political speech. So when he said, fight like hell, he could argue that he was being metaphorical. And as you know, political speech is highly protected under the First Amendment, that if the Justice Department did prosecute this inciting or aiding an insurrection, that it would have to have something beyond just that speech at the Capitol.
Well, as in really any potential criminal case, you can pick a piece of evidence and try to come up with a benign explanation for it. But let's look at some of the other evidence of that day. There's the president on the Mall, and he's told by his own deputy chief of staff that there are thousands of people that won't go through the metal detectors. And the reason why they won't go through the metal detectors is they have weapons, and they don't want the weapons taken away. And what is the president's response? His response is, then take down the effing mags, the magnetometers. They're not here to hurt me. So there's evidence the president knew the crowd was armed. He knew they were angry because he made them angry. And he instigated their march on the Capitol. He was indignant that he couldn't go with them. And when they did march the Capitol and they beat police officers and they gouged them, they sprayed them with chemicals, what did he do to stop it? Nothing. He sat there for hours in the White House dining room, watching it on TV, rejecting all appeals that he intervened to do something. In fact, what he did made it far worse, tweeting that Mike Pence had essentially been too cowardly to do the right thing and inspiring more violence when they were already chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." So I think the evidence is pretty compelling.
So the committee referred four Republican congressmen to the House Ethics Committee for sanctions over their refusal to comply with the subpoenas that you issued. And one of them is the presumed next Speaker of the House, and that's your colleague from California, Congressman Kevin McCarthy. So Republicans are taking over the House in a few weeks. Do you expect anything to happen from these referrals to the Ethics Committee?
I don't know. The Ethics Committee is, I think, the only committee in the House that's equally divided between the parties. So in that sense, it shouldn't matter which party is in the majority because it will be equally divided. Now, that equal division might mean that it's stalemated. And it may be that McCarthy appoints people to the Ethics Committee that he knows will never hold him accountable. But, you know, it was, I think, perhaps the least worst remedy in the sense that when we made referrals to the Justice Department for people who were in contempt of our subpoenas, they only were willing to prosecute half of them. And those did not involve members of Congress, and or at least not current members of Congress. So there wasn't a perfect remedy. And again, you know, we have to hope that the Ethics Committee does the right thing, but there are obviously no guarantees. And if you bet against Congress, most of the time you would bet pretty well.
Mm. Well, there's no love lost between you and Kevin McCarthy, and he said he has planned to strip you of your committee assignments. And so you are the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee. You're on the Appropriations Committee. What does that mean for your ability to, I don't know, to deliver for your constituents if you don't have essentially any power?
Well, first of all, let's see if McCarthy actually becomes Speaker. And the two things are really intertwined. In order to get votes to become Speaker, these are the kind of things he has to promise to the Marjorie Taylor Greens of his conference, who were stripped of their assignments because they were encouraging violence against fellow members of Congress. Now, yes, McCarthy doesn't like the fact that I hold him accountable. McCarthy was one of those voting to overturn the election and someone who condemned Trump and then went down and kissed the ring. So, yes, I will continue to hold him accountable, and I will with any position I hold. He's threatening to take me off one of my committees, the Intelligence Committee, and he may have the power to do it if he becomes Speaker. But I will find other ways to continue to defend our democracy and to hold him, the former president, or anyone else who is acting in a corrupt fashion accountable to the American people.
So, but were you ever collegial, the two of you? Were you ever friends in the years you've both been representing California in Congress?
You know, the first time I met Kevin McCarthy, I learned all that I would ever need to know about him. We sat on a plane flying back to Washington, D.C. It was 2010, about 6 months before the midterms. And we had kind of a nothing conversation about who was going to win the midterms. I said Democrats, and he said Republicans, and I didn't think anything more of it. We got to Congress, we went our separate ways, and he went off and did a briefing in which he told the press that Republicans were definitely going to win the midterms. Everybody knew it, and that he sat next to me on a plane, and I admitted the Republicans were going to win. I was indignant when I found out about this, and I went up to him on the House floor, and I said, Kevin, you know, what you told the press was the exact opposite of what I said. And he looked at me and he said, yeah, I know, Adam, but you know how it goes. And I said, no, Kevin, I don't know how it goes. You just make, and I use an expletive, up, and that's how you operate, because that's not how I operate. But it is how he operates. And so that, I have to say, was kind of a relationship killer from the start. And one that over time, I think so many other members have had the same experience. There was a scathing comment yesterday by his former boss, former Republican Congressman Bill Thomas, who similarly condemned Mr. McCarthy for not having an ethical compass. So it's not my observation alone.
So you think he's a liar, is what you're saying?
Well, sadly, yes. And, you know, the concern I have, frankly, far more than whether I hold my chairmanship of the Intelligence Committee is, what happens if there's another close presidential election? Had Kevin McCarthy been Speaker in 2020, he would have overturned the results. He tried to. If he is Speaker in the next election cycle, and Donald Trump runs and loses again in the general election, or some other Republican candidate loses, he may very well have the votes to overturn the election, and that ought to terrify everyone.
Will you run for Senate should Dianne Feinstein decline to seek re-election? She'll be, that's in 2024, and she would be 91 years old.
I've received a lot of encouragement from my California colleagues, from folks back home and in California, and so I'm giving it very serious consideration. I have just a phenomenal amount of respect for Senator Feinstein. I told her, as I've told the speaker, I feel like I've served with the greatest senators and greatest speaker in our history, and feel very fortunate to have a close relationship with her. Should she decide not to run, I'm giving it very, very serious consideration.
Have you talked to her about it?
I have talked with her about it. She's been very gracious, and I don't want to discuss any private conversations, but I have enjoyed a very close working relationship with her. She was the top Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, as I was the top Democrat and have been the top Democrat on the House Committee, and we've worked together thick and thin, and I really value that relationship.
Well, thank you for coming on the show again. Good to have you.
Thank you. You take care.
You too. That's Burbank Congressman Adam Schiff. Coming up, how David Hockney uses his iPad to create large landscapes. That's next on Press Play.